Welcome, dear friends. This evening, I'd like us to explore the third foundation or establishment of mindfulness, mental formations. And also to touch upon the 14 mindfulness trainings which we touched on yesterday evening. To offer it, I'd like to use a story offered by Joseph Goldstein, who I believe is an American insight meditation teacher, who speaks about the Republic of Plato, who speaks about a cave. In the cave is a row of people, chained in such a way that they only face the back of the cave wall. So they're facing the back of the cave wall. Behind this row of chained people is a fire. And a procession of people cast shadows on the back of the wall that they are viewing. This is all they can see, just the changing view of the shadows. And because this is all they can see, they believe that this is the ultimate reality. However, now and then, just now and then, someone who is chained with great effort and guidance loosens the chains and turns around and sees the fire and sees the procession of people that are casting the shadow and realizes what they have believed as the ultimate reality is not truly the ultimate reality. With more diligence, with more effort, with more guidance, some of the people that are chained free themselves totally from the chains, walk out of the cave, and are free. I think the 14 mindfulness trainings, which we touched on yesterday evening, for me, have had a little bit of that effect. Christiana, Kirsten spoke about walking towards something that we can't actually grasp. I'm paraphrasing. And the Dharma, some of the sutras, some of the things we've been saying, hopefully are offering that. So we can't quite see it, but we're walking towards it. And for me, the 14 mindfulness trainings have offered that. They're, Thich Nhat Hanh talks about them being a distillation of the Bodhisattva precepts, Bodhisattva vows. However, I don't think, Kirsten, when we spoke, I don't think we've actually said what a Bodhisattva actually is. So in the, one of the Buddhist traditions, Mahayana, and we're not going to go into the, those type of talks, we don't have the space or the time, but in a certain form of Buddhist tradition, there are people who have made that great effort with guidance and have walked very close to nirvana, to the realm of no birth, no death. We spoke a little bit about that yesterday. However, choose, out of great compassion, to bring all living beings to nirvana with them. So the Bodhisattva vows, the 14 mindfulness trainings, are a step towards that ultimate. We've spoken about them a little, and this morning we recited the five mindfulness trainings. However, I thought it would be useful just to offer one or perhaps two over the talk. So I'm going to just offer the first mindfulness training of the 14, which some folk who are part of the community have received. So please relax and again go back to your body and your breath, a bit like we did this morning. So there's not, we're not all in our head. The first mindfulness training, openness. Aware of the suffering created by fanaticism and intolerance, we are determined not to be idolatrous about or bound to any doctrine, theory, or ideology, even Buddhist ones. We are committed to seeing the Buddhist teachings as a guiding means that help us learn to look deeply and develop understanding and compassion. They are not doctrines to fight, kill, or die for. We understand that fanaticism, in its many forms, is a result of perceiving things in a dualistic or discriminative manner. We will train ourselves to look at everything with openness and insight of interbeing, in order to transform dogmatism and violence in ourselves and in the world. So this is the first of the 14 mindfulness trainings that has inspired me and encouraged me over many years to take tiny steps towards something that is quite a way away sometimes. Another way that we can look at things is imagining the ocean. So the ocean is made up of waves. and waves of different sizes, different colors, different shapes, different sizes. And the wave, because it might appear different to the other waves around it, thinks to itself with its internal dialogue, I wish I was that wave. That wave is so much bigger than me. And look at the color of that wave. That is so blue. Oh boy, that wave's just cut across my path, and irritation comes up in the wave. Jealousy comes up because one wave is bigger than the other. I think I'll get my little bit of sea tinted that blue because I like it. I know it costs a little bit more, but I'll work even harder. Might not see my family quite as much, but I'll work harder because I want that blue there. And that, Tai tells us, is the wave in the historic dimension. Does it remind you of any other species? No? No, it doesn't. There happens to be a few more waves floating around that have had some guidance. They may have even come to Gaia House. And they recognize that, of course, they are really the ocean. They are not separate from the ocean. And all the other waves are part of the ocean too. And therefore, why did that one wave want to do a few extra hours, get a few extra shares, whatever, in order to get that color blue? The 14 mindfulness trainings is a practical way for me to get closer to the ocean, to not see myself as that separate wave, which I often still do. Sometimes when that happens, it makes life a lot easier. I'm not that good at handiwork. I'm not a great handy person. But sometimes I might pick up a hammer, bang a nail in a wall. And sometimes I might hit my thumb as I'm knocking the nail into the wall. Of course, this hand doesn't take the hammer off that hand and bang this hand with the hammer, does it? It doesn't do that. In fact, it will take down the hammer and it will caress and it will take care of the hammer that is hurt. The same as the fact that I'm right-handed, and just because my left hand can't write that well, it doesn't mean I'm still not going to hold that left hand. And when I get closer to the ocean, when I get closer to the ultimate dimension, to that place over there that Kirsten pointed to last night, I think, what did you? You speak. You did.
Did
everybody hear that? Yeah? That the teachers for it, yep. Ultimate dimension. You're getting the idea now. You're getting the idea. And it's interesting that we still call these trainings the mindfulness trainings, because being forever watchful, being mindful, is at the heart of moving to the ultimate dimension. So how do we truly move there in reality? by studying and practicing with the trainings, with the precepts? What are some of the practical ways that we keep our mindfulness alive? Yes, it's very helpful when we're amongst friends on the path who will sit with us in this beautiful environment. However, if we are going to go into the world and transform some of our own personal suffering, some of our family's suffering, some of the suffering in our work, and some wider issues that we're aware of, then we really do need some help and some guidance. The third foundation of mindfulness, mental formations, helps us with this. Thay says that anything that is a formation is made up with something else. It's a flower is made up of non-flower elements. It's made up of the sun, it's made up of compost, it's made of the time and the energy of the people who work in the gardens. It's made up of the rain, it's made up of sun. It's made up of non-flower elements, and everything is like that. Mental formations are similar. They're made up of lots and lots of elements. Some mental formations are beautiful and wholesome and bring lightness to us. For example, the mental formation of mindfulness, the mental formation of compassion, of joy, of happiness, of delight. And some mental formations need help to be transformed. Anger, delusion, irritation, jealousy, boredom. Thay is keen that we act. And so he has offered some teachings on how we can transform those mental formations that are unwholesome and how we can grow those mental formations such as mindfulness, joy, compassion, loving kindness, that are helpful to us and to the world and to our family and to our friends. So imagine, sometimes I would use a circle. Imagine a circle. And there's a horizontal line breaking the circle into two. In the bottom half of the circle are mental formations. Let's call them seeds. Let's call them seeds. So seeds of happiness, joy, love, compassion, seeds of anger, and other unwholesome seeds, jealousy, pride. And they are in our store consciousness. The top line is consciousness. And sometimes, because of our senses, an unwholesome seed may come up into our consciousness. Let's take anger, for example. Let's take rage, for example. So say we're on a demonstration. Say that we are really committed to social justice, to saving our planet. I take part in certain issues that bring that up around social justice. And say some things happen on that march, and anger comes up into our consciousness, into our individual consciousness. If we are not aware of it, and there is a collective consciousness of anger in that demonstration, in that organization, in that family, then that seed will grow and grow and grow, and may result in action. However, if our mindfulness seed is strong, we can call that mindfulness seed up and embrace the unwholesome emotion, breathe like we have been doing here, come back to our body like we've been doing here, give ourselves some space and time like we've been doing here. And if our mindfulness is strong enough, because we have nourished it, we have nourished it well with happiness and joy and peace and silence, then that unwholesome seed may go back to the store consciousness, and we can be more functional in terms of what we have set out to do. Our anger isn't clouding our activism or our action, or our interactions with our son, daughter, nephew, niece, partner, mum, dad. And this is the way that Thay asks us to practice. Before I move to a few more ways, Kirsten, would it be helpful for you to just speak about mental formations from your, or not?
Not sure.
I think it would be good, but if you're tired,
I see. Yeah. Just give me a moment.
Okay. So, I'll just continue for a little while. And talk about garters. I was in a group yesterday, and a dear friend spoke about them, and it's inspired me to offer this. We were asked about top tips yesterday, and I think I'm leaning towards answering one of the top tips from Thich Nhat Hanh's, even though we're not fully through the retreat yet. Within the Plum Village tradition, we will use short lines of words to wake us up. To wake us up. I'll give you an example. Before we eat, we would read a gatha. And this makes us awake to the food. So we're not thinking about our projects. We're not thinking about what we're going to do in the future. We're not thinking about the past. Can you know, when you're at home, sometimes you have the radio on, you're thinking about your project and you're eating your food at the same time? No, you're all perfectly mindful. Oh, I'm with this sangha here. So this might be one of the gardens. This food is a gift of the earth, the sky, numerous living beings, and much hard, loving work. May we eat with mindfulness and gratitude in order to be worthy to receive it. May we keep our compassion alive by living and eating in such a way that we reduce the suffering of living beings, preserve our planet, and reverse the process of climate change. And on retreat, and some people at home will have these dotted around the house. So when they wake up and they're brushing the teeth, there will be a gatha about brushing your teeth. So you'll be awake, you'll be present, you'll be mindful about brushing your teeth. When you pick up the telephone, I don't suppose many of... I still have a landline, so I can practice it. That's truth. And honest. The telephone will ring when I'm forgetful. I will just pick it up and answer. But I want to offer compassion to everybody that I speak to. I want to be present with everyone that is in front of me or on the phone. So there's a gata which reminds me to take 3 breaths. I'm virtually giving away who else knows about the gathas by pointing. Sorry. Imagine having all of these around your house to keep you awake. Imagine having these at work to keep you awake. Does that make sense? Yeah? And so what Tai is trying to do is strengthen our mindfulness muscle, strengthen our compassion muscle, strengthen our love muscle. So when we're not feeling so good, when sadness has entered our consciousness from our store consciousness, when boredom or irritation, we have something to bring up mindfulness, to be present, to understand, to offer that loving heart, that compassionate heart, and offer some harmony wherever we are, in ourselves, at the demonstration, in our home, in our workplace, in our university, in the Dharma hall.
Something first. The word gata. Can you say something about where the word comes from? I heard it, but I never knew about its roots.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you know.
So, the only place I can go to really is transmission. So I'll be quick. So the tradition I belong to is a I'll do it quick. Is a Rinzai tradition. And another bit of guidance for us in the Rinzai tradition,
which is a Zen tradition,
The Mahayana.
Yeah.
I don't want to. Yeah. A little bit. That was helpful. But I'm just going to pull me in. Keep pulling me in, because this isn't the time. And within the Rinzai tradition, which is a Zen tradition, which is in the Mahayana tradition, you use small words to wake you up. Yep, so words are used to wake you up. And the gata, so when I was offered the lamp in order to teach and was ordained, then I was had to look very deeply and from my heart and my consciousness and my ancestors, a few words came up. I then offer them to my teacher and the patriarchs and the matriarchs of my tradition, and then the teacher, as they offer the lamp, offers you some words which hopefully wake you up. Is that?
Yeah.
And I'll leave it there. And then look it up on the internet when you're allowed to, in a few days' time.
Thank you. It's always this easy sounding question, and one opens a whole door.
Yeah, I just have to be really careful.
Yeah. So, I would like to to just share something in response, you know, when you read this gatha about the food. So you really emphasized this quality, it wakes you up, you know. And for me, waking up is more this wake up, you know, it's this short, you know, wake up call. And I really see this here, but I think what also is really beautiful with this, that it is a contemplation which immediately weaves you into the fabric of life. So you are immediately questioning this whole, at times very much ingrained perception, here I am on my own, separate from, you know, I'm here and then the world is out there. So to honor in this gatha, you know, to honor the food in this way, I place me into a bigger web of life very consciously. So when you said it's a wake-up call, what came up for me, it's also a wake-up call to this, because we can be locked in this perception, you know, that we are separate, that we are not belonging, that we are here for our taking. All kinds of different sankharas, mental formations can arise. And this is one questioning in a very particular way of this misperception of separateness. Good, yeah? And I think, again, you know, I never thought about a gatha, to be honest. You know, in this way, you know, just really like listening to it. And what I find also interesting, again, just listening to it and placing it from more from how I'm teaching and from where I'm teaching, this placing oneself into a bigger container, as we already did with the lighting of the candle, and someone asked today what they stand for, ancestry, future generation, and us. It's one way of looking at it. We already softening, and this might not make sense, but I say it just in this short way, the painfulness, not the wrongness or the, you know, it's not a moral judgment at all, but the painfulness in being really hooked up in tight loops about me, I, and so forth. Because it's actually very, very painful and very, very separating and very flattening view of the world. So then again with the gatha, with this particular one, and I think they all have similar flavor, I'm placing myself also in a much more dimensionality. So I think it's beautiful. And I know from myself, I have to confess, you know, I put something up and after some time it just becomes words, yeah. Isn't it? You know, when I said yesterday or the day before yesterday, I have this generosity in my kitchen, cut my bread, yeah. So there is also something that needs to really foster this alive connections with it. We have to keep it alive, we have to make it, because everything can be, yeah. So that's, and you said something about mental formations. You know, and I really hope that you know, I have no idea how this, you know, our conversation, how the land with you, you know. So first, I just really want to acknowledge also, you know, when you're speaking, you know, I feel touched, you know, I try to feel into it, you know, and I'm also aware that my practice is placed on a slightly different map. Yeah, it's a slightly different map of walking through the territory. And really great to start with this first reflection on not being attached to views, and really sensing myself, I'm not, I'm interested, you know, oh God, what is stoic consciousness? What does he speak about?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then to dance this dance. So it's I heard about stoic. It's not that I'm working with it, and I think it is a powerful way of looking at experience. It can be a really powerful way of looking at experience. So mental formations, you know, and you alluded to them. Could be anything from thoughts, emotions, intentions, volitions, emotion, everything that is arising in the mind, isn't it?
Yes.
Mental formations. And the teachings invite us to look at them and to see, you know, how we identify with them, how they color our perception. So I don't want to go now into a talk about the third foundation of mindfulness. But I would like to offer maybe one aspect which really, really hit me on one level. So the word for mental formation is sankhara. And one translation of the word sankhara is fabrication, is that is fabricated, yeah, but also that what fabricates. And I think this I found really, really, when I read this, you know, and this very, it's like that it is fabricated, but it's also fabricating. And I see this in this context as whatever mental formation is operating in the heart and mind will be part of how we fabricate the world. Yeah. Sankhara, that's what is fabricated, what you said, this is fabricated, but it also fabricates.
Yes.
Yeah. So can you just read the beginning of the first of the 14?
Okay. I'll keep consistent. I'll use the recitation book. Aware of the suffering created by fanaticism and intolerance, we are determined not to be idolatrous about or bound by any doctrine, theory, or ideology, even Buddhist ones.
So I don't know don't know if it works, you know. So what comes up for me? You know, all this, you know, ideologies, ideas, doctrines are mental formations.
Yes, yes,
yeah.
Yes,
yes. Yeah. And when we take one mental formation, you know, and take this as the only way of looking at the world, yeah. It will also influence. First of all, it's diluted because
yes.
There are many. You know, it's ever
yes.
changing. You know, there are, yeah, and also we actually. Wait, I have to go slower. If we take, okay, we already. So, how I understand the teachings in this, how I, you know, not deeply realized, absolutely not, but. How I understand the teachings here, as soon as we take one mental formation, one sankhara, and see this as a statement about how the world is, we are already deluded. We are deeply deluded. So this is one point. So like really look for this when you think this is how the world is.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. If and also when we take one particular view, not to underestimate how the very viewing will shape what is actually perceived.
Yes.
So take care. That's what I hear here. It's saying, take care.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much. Because it leads very smoothly into the second of the 14 mindfulness trainings. And this is the last that I'll read of the 14. The second mindfulness training is non-attachment to views. Non-attachment to views. Aware of the suffering created by attachment to views and wrong perceptions, we are determined to avoid being narrow-minded and bound to present views. We are committed to learning and practicing non-attachment from views and being open to others. Being open to others' insights and experiences in order to benefit from the collective wisdom. Insight is revealed through the practice of compassionate listening, deep looking, and letting go. Letting go of notions rather than through the accumulation of intellectual knowledge. We are aware that the knowledge we presently possess, is not changeless. Absolute truth is found in life. And we will observe life within and around us, in every moment, ready to learn throughout our lives. Dear friends, I think we could go on for hours looking at the Bodhisattva vows and the 14 mindfulness trainings, which we don't have. So I think I'm going to stop there. If you wish to read, study, think about, reflect on the 14 mindfulness trainings, then please do. The Plum Village website has them on, and you can download them. And there's many commentaries on these trainings, which you can read and reflect upon. However, dear friend, is there any? Yeah, here we go. Yeah. Rinzai Zen. Yeah. Yeah, are there any thoughts or comments before we close?
When we spoke earlier in the kitchen in the little teacher flat, so Dean asked me to just have a short look at the two mindfulness trainings. And we had a short conversation, and I just said, God, there's so much subtext here. There's so much, you know, like one sentence, there's so much subtext, you know, and this, you know, on one level, I think when you say studying it, you know, it is really this unpicking and the depths actually it points to. There is actually really a lot of depth, which doesn't, it's not that obvious. You know, and I think when you say study it, and your engagement with these precepts, with these bodhisattva vows, I assume this is this unpicking, discovering layers and layers of beauty actually, and wisdom in them. Yeah.
Yeah, we spend several years before we. Receive ordination and the lamp, doing exactly that, not just studying them though, studying them through life. Yes, there are a lot of texts that you've said that we need to go under, so we do need to study. However, a lot of the emphasis is learning in our everyday lives, taking learning from our everyday lives. Thay is very keen that we balance our learning by using our life to follow the path.
Yeah, thank you.
So now we have walking meditation. Feel free to walk or stretch. I know some of you sit and some of you drink tea. All good. I'll just invite a bell and then we'll call.